healing techniques and big changes. And I have a paradigm shifter, someone who's really helping people with this change. Visiting with me today, Dr. Suzanne Wang, who's a naturopathic doctor. Welcome to the show, Suzanne.
Hi, Veronica. Thanks.
How you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Okay, well, we got some questions for you today. We wanted to know a whole bunch of things about paradigm shifting. And I know that you, can you hear me all right?
Yes, I can.
All right. I know that you're involved in consciousness and metaphysics as well as the physical process, right?
Yes, that's right.
And the other thing is that your specialty is the environmental toxicity. Would you call this your specialty or your current interest?
It's my current interest. It's just environmental impact or environmental toxicity on illness or health.
Okay, and you know a lot about mental health, don't you?
Yes.
So we would like to talk to you about that today, and I'd like to talk about things like autism, ADD, ADHD, bioidentical hormones, heavy metal toxicity. And I noticed on your website, which is naturalhealthcalifornia.com, it's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed you mentioned fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue as well, and I still have clients who are very frustrated with that particular condition, eh?
Right.
So let's talk about your perspective on environmental things. Don't you think the environment has always had a huge impact on the health of societies?
Right. So it plays one of the biggest roles. There's also obviously the spiritual and emotional aspects as well. But what I do a lot of is helping people find the underlying causes of some of their illnesses, of which environmental exposure or inability to eliminate a lot of toxins, either chemicals or heavy metals, those all affect the health and the ability for the body to heal quickly.
So if a person comes to you and they're, say, suffering from, I'll just make it up, but say chronic fatigue,
mm-hmm.
would you then what would you do? Would you start checking for environmental impact?
Some of it. I think if chronic fatigue starts with both understanding whether or not there's an adrenal impact, which is one of the hormones that's produced for stress. A lot of people who are chronically fatigued have been under stress for a number of months or years, and then the toll on the body has accumulated to a certain point. So adrenals play a huge role, your adrenal glands, in dealing with the stress. And after they get run down, your ability to deal with the stress really diminishes, which means, and stress is just not only emotional stress, but also physical stress. Lots of exercise. A lot of people who've had too many marathons or too much excessive exercise will also get chronically fatigued.
Well, that's funny because we always expect that that's detoxifying our body at such a rate.
Right, but some people do it to an excess. And some people can tolerate more exercise than others as well, depending on their nutritional status, their emotional place, and, you know, there's so many different factors.
So what you recommend is that people know their own needs, right?
Right. So some people feel, to a certain extent, some people feel a lot better when they exercise energetically. But after a certain point, they feel just really drained, and some people can hardly get out of bed, partially because of adrenal stuff, but also because of perhaps viruses that they might have gotten a hold of, that might have taken hold because their immune system has been weak, either through environmental exposure or food allergies and things like that that all accumulate in the body's on the impact on the body system.
Do you want to say anything about food allergies?
Pardon?
Do you want to say anything about food allergies? Like, food allergies are on the increase, are they not? Or is it just that our environment is becoming both smaller and more intensely toxic? Is that right?
Yeah, I think the food allergies, well, I guess I should first distinguish. Most of the time, it's not an obvious allergy because allergies are immediate hypersensitivity reactions. So if you are exposed to, say, a strawberry that you're allergic to, you know it within a short, just within a few minutes. So we call them food allergies, but oftentimes they're food sensitivities, and these things accumulate because your ability to tolerate These are delayed hypersensitivities, and they take longer for the impact to show up on the body.
Hmm.
So these are more subtle, but they also speak to a lot of the chronically, more of the chronic problems that our bodies tend to have, fatigue being one of them.
So if we have adrenal glands that are a little bit weak, and then we have long-term food sensitivities, the whole thing can come together in a bit of a tragedy, right?
Right. So there's most of the patients that I deal with are either chemically sensitive or have chronic things like chronic pain, like fibromyalgia, or chronic migraines and things like that. And there's not just one answer, usually. When we're trying to get to the underlying cause, it has a lot to do with the different layers of what, you know, the emotional stress and the physical stresses, like food sensitivities and heavy metals and things like that.
So what are heavy metals? So how do we get those?
Heavy metals are things like mercury or lead, arsenic. Those are common things that we are exposed to.
And rock music?
Pardon? Yes, exactly. And those are things that we're exposed to on a regular basis. There's been a lot of publicity recently about lead in children's toys. But there's also lead in paint and lead in your lipstick and cosmetics and things like that. And mercury is often found in either those silver fillings in your teeth or things like fish. Seafood is very common source for mercury. And they stopped making paint with mercury in it, but and vaccinations used to have mercury in it as well, but they stopped doing that as well. So,
if a person is very strong in their defense system, can they offset the influence of, say, for example, mercury or lead?
It's really an accumulation. So it's not so much of an immunity to the heavy metals, but it's your ability to detoxify them. So people with higher levels of zinc and copper have the ability to detoxify lead naturally, heavy metals naturally, moreover somebody who does not.
Oh, that's interesting. I never knew that. So tell us about detoxification. What do you do with people? Like, what kind of regimen can we go through? We listeners, what can we do?
You do? Detoxification is such a big, broad subject. But if we're talking about heavy metals, mm-hmm. The process is called chelation because your body, if your body's not able to detoxify or get rid of them, the heavy metals naturally by itself, it gets stored into your organs someplace. And it needs to be bound before it's pulled out. So the chelating process, there's a number of different chelators that are quite safe to be able to pull out heavy metals. And
chelating is like an intravenous kind of thing, is it?
I do it orally, which I find to be extremely effective and non-invasive and works well for, like, for our autistic children and stuff. They don't like to be put into an IV and sat there for long periods of time.
Do you see a relationship between environmental toxicity and autism?
The biggest relationship I see in autistic children the biggest commonality is that they have difficulty detoxifying.
Oh, really? Yeah, that's interesting.
Right. So a lot of them can accumulate heavy metals relatively early on, and sometimes it's passed on from the mom when she was pregnant. But also, it's multifactorial. It's not only that you have a higher accumulation of heavy metals, but you also have digestive disturbances, usually yeast overgrowth, food sensitivities. All of those things impact your immune system and thus your nervous system.
But when does it show up on a child? Is it like at birth?
Not until maybe about a year and a half, 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Usually there's a vocal speech delay, problems with looking at parents in the eyes, a lot of stimulating events like repetitive motions, hand flapping, and, you know, aggression sometimes, sleep disturbances, lots of different things. Basically, the child is disconnected from their environment. They don't really notice that the other people are in the room, and they don't try and communicate or connect with them.
Hmm. And you feel that this you've had some great successes working with these children.
I have. I've been able to see a lot of reversals, a lot of their symptoms early on.
Wow.
I take on children from all ages, and the best results usually are when I start working with a child before they're five.
Hmm. What about ADD?
ADD is kind of, you know, they call it a part of the autism spectrum, but I found that that some of the underlying issues are a little bit different. The child either is hyperactive or not, but they have different abilities, difficulty with focusing and things like that. Some of the focusing is obvious when you look at them, or if you try and sit them down to do something in school, it becomes more obvious. But some of those children, I think, tend to be more creative as well, and they tend not to learn in the same way that we expect them to learn in our society.
Mm-hmm.
So, and sometimes they are attention deficit in that way. But there are, in autism, children who just have difficulty focusing on anything. You know, they go from one thing to another within seconds. It's really disturbing to watch in some cases.
It is, but it's a huge increase. Why do you think that is?
You know, from an environmental standpoint, I can see the accumulation of toxins in our water and air and things like that. So I can say that from just an environmental toxicity standpoint, that's a possibility. But I think that there is also a spiritual or maybe a soul aspect or reason as well. And you could probably have more input or thoughts about that.
Well, it's interesting, actually, because I think it is evolutionary in a way.
Yeah.
But I guess I'm not going to wager too far into that one right now.
it's a really long discussion, actually.
It's a huge discussion. I think the ADD, ADHD thing, I always work with brain chemistry,
mm-hmm.
that kind of consciousness, or the electricity fields in the brain,
right.
And how the fields are shifting so fast right now, and then we've got all our media stuff and electronics and so on. And I think that's had a huge impact. What do you think of that?
Yeah, that would make sense to me. I actually have a number of patients who have really large sensitivities to electromagnetic fields and who can sense it and actually are disturbed or feel very out of sorts in their bodies
mm-hmm.
from it. And to a certain extent, their sensitivity is, I would say that that's probably more evolutionary or becoming more aware of the electric or resonant sort of impact of the machines that we use so much.
What do you do for them? What can you do?
Well, I help. Generally, I start with heavy metal detoxification because usually that aggravates the nervous system so much that it can really calm it down. The other thing is often we do something called NAET, which is an allergy elimination technique.
Mm-hmm.
For foods and environmental environmental allergens as well. But some of our patients have been treated for EMF fields, and that really helps relieve some of the disturbance, but also helping people just be aware of and manage their own energy fields.
And how do you teach that? That's pretty interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, I teach them some protective visualizations and how to meditate and how to manage their energy fields better. A lot of these people are very psychic anyways. You know, they can feel either kinesthetically or can sense other people's energies. So they have... they get affected by both other people's energies as well as electromagnetic fields around them. So
they get energy orexic, I always call it.
Yes.
I have a friend who's, I guess he's just turned 40,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And he's living a horrible existence right now, trying to keep himself safe from EMS.
And, yeah, that's hard nowadays.
And my understanding of it, and this is back to evolution, my understanding is he's going to turn it around at some point so that he can offset it consciously. You know how we have the ability inside to change how we react on the outside.
Yeah.
But he's not ready to quite yet.
I think a part of it is maybe an internal resistance to something in the environment, maybe emotionally, which doesn't allow, which kind of clashes, your resonance sort of clashes with the electromagnetic fields, and it doesn't, they don't harmonize as well. Because, you know, most people don't feel them. But some people are very sensitive to it. So.
Well, it's a huge issue for some people, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Very debilitating, especially in our modern world where everything is electromagnetically affected. And, you know, a lot of people sometimes get headaches and things like that with earth ley lines and the intersection of those, too.
That's true. I've experienced that myself.
Yeah, me too. I had my desk placed in the wrong place once and had repeated headaches until I figured out what it was.
And do you use feng shui?
I did. I had somebody who was dowsing come in and remove my, tell me where to move my stuff to.
It's such an interesting subject, isn't it? Because back to evolution, I believe that's evolutionary.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the waking up to the influences around us and really taking charge of those is evolutionary.
Yeah.
And for some people, it's really hard, huh?
Right, it is.
There's another thing I wanted to talk. We had several people write in their questions, and one woman who is a really conscious woman, she's 77 now, and she's very vital and very much an artist, a real character.
Mm-hmm.
She wants to know how to offset the aging problems in the brain. How can we strengthen our brain so we can age with a certain amount of grace and not have to forget everything? And
right.
If you think about electronics, I think they get in the way of some of that, too, until we dominate the fields, right?
Right, exactly. That's one of the things. One of the most easiest ways of doing this is to moderate your stress as much as possible, because the stress hormones will affect brain cell die-off or will affect the brain chemistry probably greater than anything else. But also detoxifying as heavy metals build up as we get older. I've seen a number of elderly people, especially people after menopause, not that they're elderly, but after menopause, the accumulation of heavy metals increases because of the lead in particular tends normally to be bound in the bones. As our bones start to thin, it gets released and you get access more to the lead again. But detoxifying or chelating the heavy metals out will significantly improve your brain function, both and also dealing with the adrenal hormones, DHEA if you're low in it, and reducing your cortisol levels so that your brain isn't as affected by those.
And the cortisol is that kind of stress hormone.
It is one of the stress hormones produced by the adrenals. Yep.
Well, here's another factor. We'll talk about aging since we're on that subject. And there's a lot of people who are getting so wise and so clear, and you don't want to lose your brain at that point because it's time to spend this information, isn't it?
Right.
So talk about menopause and postmenopause or even perimenopausal. Somebody called in last week, and she was taking DHEA in a perimenopausal situation and was finding it was making a huge difference for her.
Right.
And the person I was talking to had very little faith in that. He said it was essential to take bioidentical hormones in order to give yourself longevity.
Mm-hmm.
And the way you're talking, I'm going, anyway, why don't you talk about that?
Well, menopause is a natural process, right? I can't imagine that counteracting a natural process is something that is wiser than what our bodies would really need. So, but what we can do is reduce a lot of the negative impact from our environment. So that includes improving your adrenal function. And if your DHEA is low, dealing with that. But DHEA doesn't need to be supplemented for very long. I don't ever supplement DHEA for more than a month or so, because once your adrenals are up and running again, you don't need it.
So DHEA is to support the adrenals?
Mm-hmm. It's an adrenal hormone. So when your adrenals are strong, it's producing it very well. But with the environment and some of the chemicals that we are exposed to, and this is, you know, when I say it's not just heavy metals, you know, it's your dry cleaning fluids, the chlorine in your water, it's the fumes from gasoline and perfumes and synthetic things in your body lotions and things like that. These are all chemicals that accumulate in your system. And if you have difficulty detoxifying it, you're not able to, they can accumulate in your system and then affect your hormones or neurotransmitters.
So what would a person who would come to you, you would do some testing for all these?
Generally, I do. I don't always test for adrenals because I can pretty much tell just by what they're telling me whether or not they have adrenal weakness.
Well, let's tell some of the symptoms.
So some of the symptoms, besides having low energy, especially in the morning, imbalanced blood sugar, like tending to have low blood sugar symptoms, you know, needing to eat really right now and getting shaky or irritable if you don't.
I have some of that.
Yeah, I know. We all do. And in different times of our lives, we have more of it. But some people just let it go too far, so then it accumulates. Its impact accumulates. Also, insomnia, meaning waking up in the middle of the night, like you have no trouble falling asleep, but you have trouble waking up. Or sorry, you have trouble with waking up and then not being able to fall asleep, like you have the racing mind.
Mm-hmm.
Lightheaded on standing, the low blood pressure when you stand up quickly. Let me see what else. Brain fog, of course.
Sore feet.
I'm not sure. That's, you know, as it gets worse, you know, adrenal weakness does accumulate or get worse and can lead to things like fibromyalgia and stuff where you do get pain in your feet.
Well, it's interesting because many years ago I was studying natural foods and so on, and, of course, I was studying Adele Davis, which we all did. I'm 100 years old now, of course.
And you look great.
Thank you. Well, it's just a little DHEA here and there, you know. But my feet were always hot and sore. And really, I thought when I was young that I was just in despair over my feet. But Adele Davis said, take pantothenic acid. And
yes.
I laughed at her. I made fun of her behind her back. But the reality was, as soon as I took it, my feet started to get better.
Yes.
And my minerals started improving. But I also heard at that time that was the pressure area for the adrenal gland.
Yes. Well, the pantothenic acid is one of the key things that we use. And I only use it in combination with other B vitamins. But I use a B complex hot, very, very high in pantothenic acid. And use that for probably, depending on how low the adrenal glands are or the adrenal function is, probably 3 to 6 months regularly.
Huh.
Usually people feel great in about two weeks to a month.
Huh. So that's a really good way to shore up the old...
It is, but the temptation is to either over-exercise or not moderate their eating or not moderate their stress shortly after feeling great, and then you know, ending up back in adrenal deficit again. So the key is to make sure that you're having good support for many months to build up your reserves again, because by the time you're feeling all those symptoms, your adrenal glands are weak enough so that you're feeling a lot of the imbalance.
Hmm.
And then that can affect your other hormones, your thyroid hormone and your female or male hormones. Those can be thrown off as well because the adrenals, the ovaries or testes, and the thyroid are all linked very much.
Okay, so say that. So the adrenals, the ovaries, the testes, and the thyroid?
Right. Well, ovaries for women or testes in the men, and the thyroid, those three things will impact each other. So if you have long-term stress, you will soon find out that your thyroid hormone is off, or vice versa. If you had long-term thyroid depletion or thyroid problems, your adrenal hormones can be thrown off, and your periods are usually off or heavy or something like that.
And so, it's been my experience working with people also that a big shock or a death in the family or something can knock the thyroid awry.
Yes, yeah. But it first knocks your adrenals out.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's really interesting, actually.
Yeah.
The whole glandular thing. Now, I know a young woman who, I know her very well. She's my precious stepdaughter, actually.
Mm.
And she had her pituitary removed when she was 10 years old.
Oh, right.
And she's pretty amazing. She's almost 40 now. She's a brilliant actress. But what she's had to take, and this is a very interesting thing for me to understand, is that she's had to take a lot of supplementation just to stay alive and also
yes.
to grow to be at least 5 feet tall.
Right.
If she would have been, I think, 3'8" or 3'10" or something.
Yeah.
And she wanted to know about the pituitary, and was there anything that you could teach us about supplementing to strengthen the pituitary, whatever. She had, I think, a tenth of it left, but it doesn't seem to regenerate.
Gosh. I don't have anything in particular, but I do know that if you remove that much of the pituitary, you're going to be on hormones for the rest of your life.
And she is on hormones.
Yeah.
And the other question we had was not just about her, but several of us, many of us actually, are wondering, under these circumstances, like her circumstance or those of us who are past menopause, bioidentical hormones, is that really a wonderful thing to take in order to rebalance our hormonal output? And would my stepdaughter, Janie, would she do really well taking bioidentical hormones instead of taking the artificial hormones that she's being given all the time?
Bioidentical hormones, most people do better on them.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have as much of the risk for cancer and things like that, if we're talking about female hormones.
Yeah, and we're talking about they have an ability to synergize with our life force and the body.
But you know, I don't think I'm the right person to talk to about supplementation, bioidentical hormone supplementing after menopause, because philosophically, as I believe that menopause is just like puberty, a very natural part of your evolutionary, you know, your progress, your aging and maturity and stuff. I think it's a natural process, so I really am hesitant to think that it's something that we should be taking in our 70s because...
Well, I think there's a question here that maybe requires research for all of us, which is, do we lose... Okay, in the old days, many women did not live to be close to 100 or even past, right?
Mm-hmm.
It just wasn't done.
Right.
So a lot of people didn't live postmenopausally.
Right.
And I guess my question is, because I know, you know, in my work and so on with people, a lot of people, and that there are all kinds of little symptoms that come up, like you get dry, you're not as flexible.
Yes.
Doing yoga, I can't do what I used to do. And I'm very fit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I eat really well. You see what I mean?
That's true.
It's a hypothetical... And it's a research kind of question, right?
Yeah,
now,
I really don't know. I don't know what it's like. You know, presumably there's some sort of recourse as well, because if you're taking bioidentical hormones, even if they are bioidentical, past menopausal times, you know, you're still putting yourself more at risk for hormonally related cancers and things, just because your estrogen window is open so much longer. But then on the other side, you know, we have children that are going into puberty so much more quickly now because of the estrogenic effects of our environment. So we have it actually.
Why is that? Is that because everybody's eating chicken and they're...
Yeah, pretty much, actually.
Really?
It's not only that. You know, there's a lot of something called xenoestrogens, which are estrogens, chemicals that have estrogenic activity. You know, they kind of sit on your estrogen receptors.
Now, I heard that was coming through plastic bottles.
Yes, plastic bottles is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
There are, you know, styrofoam and other, there are a lot of plastic pesticides actually have them. Cadmium, which is a heavy metal, will have is a huge xenoestrogen.
Well, now that's
soy,
really
too much overeating of soy, which, you know, I'm not a huge fan of.
Well, it always gives me a tummy ache, so that took care of that for me.
Me too, right.
But isn't it interesting because a lot of people don't have any idea that this is creating an estrogen overload, hey?
Yeah, it's becoming more and more evident. A lot of the chemicals just affect our estrogen receptors. And so now we see, you know, the breast cancer risk is going, it's, it used to be 1 in 10 women, and now it's 1 in 8 women, and, you know, going down to 1 in 6 women.
So what can we do about that, Suzanne?
Dark leafy greens would be a really good one. Kale, collard, Swiss chard, dandelion greens, beet greens, all those dark leafy greens that really help you. A lot of the cabbage family will help you detoxify some of that. Fiber, you know, a lot of it is also the processing of our foods. You know, we're a lot less fiber nowadays in our foods. More hormones if you're not eating organic, a lot more hormones injected into the cows and chickens and whatever else we're eating, you know.
And so that it is a mystery what's going to happen with all of that, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, I agree. It is. I mean, but there has to be the movement towards just helping our own body deal with the chemicals that we're being exposed to. You know, on the one hand, there's the legislation that we could support, but there's also, you know, it's not just our country. You know, there are toxic fires or things that happen in Africa that affect our exposure here in the States or in Canada because of the wind patterns and things like that. So it's not just what we do here in the States, but everywhere.
It's a global thing.
It is.
Yeah, well, I forget what you... Well, keep talking about that. Oh, you talked about how we have to learn to... What is it? Handle... what I took from what you said a few paragraphs back was that we need to learn to adjust our body-mind to that which is there. And, for example, maybe learn to detox better.
Yeah, to detoxify better. A lot of the, you know, the nutrient status of vegetables and fruits have really gone down with the type of farming that we do that is being done nowadays. You know, it's made for mass production. So, you know, there are so there's lots of bugs being killed off your vegetables and with the pesticides and the herbicides and things, which is reasonable for farming, but not necessarily so healthy for us because the nutrient status has diminished as well in our fruits and vegetables. So eating more organic foods, fruits and vegetables, can help, but also getting the variety. A lot of people end up having getting stuck in a rut of having you know, just the same three or four vegetables that they eat all the time, and fruits. So getting the variety in the colors and in the flavors and textures and things like that. Usually, you know that you're getting a good variety when you're eating three or four or five different colored vegetables. And
you're saying it built into organic.
You do get more. The research is that there's more nutrients in those vegetables and fruits.
And the minerals that we need for detoxification.
Yes.
Come through. It's very interesting.
And eating a balanced diet.
The other thing is, do you deal with people's emotions, the emotional content?
Yes.
So talk a bit about that. Like, for example, I've done work with fibromyalgia, for example, where it was a long process of pulling out emotional belief after emotional belief until finally the person started to be able to maintain being free of all that,
right,
you know, and got better.
Right. Well, a lot of it is sometimes it's, I think for a lot of people, it's a lesson, perhaps, of the way that a lot of people, about how they were dealing with life in a particular way up to a certain point. I have a number of people with fibromyalgia who were type A workaholic sorts of people who kind of burned out their adrenals, got a virus, and haven't been able to get out of it since.
And that's, those are two ways that you can get it, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Usually they're both. You know, both things are happening at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And genetic propensity, or is it just across the board full spectrum?
You know, in some way I'm sure that it is a genetic propensity, and I also think that there's probably a like a soul path, you know, lesson to learn, or maybe becoming more internally aware for a while and really taking a look at what is important, and then learning those emotional lessons so that the pain that is your trigger can release more easily. You know, it's what I found is that it doesn't always relieve just by understanding what the lesson is, that the message that your body is trying to give you, but you need to combine that with helping the body heal.
Hmm. I also think that there's another thing, and you know, I'm just having discussion. I'm not pretending to be right here, but for people to know who they really are,
mm-hmm.
instead of living a socially contrived reality,
mm-hmm.
I think that's a huge damaging thing till we get to the root of it for many of us, isn't it?
Yeah, so a lot of people do things just because they've always done them without the reflection of why it is you're doing what you're doing.
And,
so,
and I would agree with you, that's a soul journey. When when your soul insists on getting its message, that's usually when we get dropped to our knees, I think.
Yes, that's right. And how soon, I think a lot of how soon you, or how quickly you heal from something kind of depends on how quickly you learn what the message is and understand and hear the message.
But sometimes it's a slow and arduous journey, isn't it?
Yeah, and maybe there's something really good at the end of it. I always want to think that there's something great at the end of it.
Can you, I see that over and over. I meet a lot of people who have experienced some really debilitating disease only to come through it with a real teacher's role or something very profound. You know,
mm-hmm.
I met that a lot. Can you talk a bit about cancer and its the impact on us that creates cancer? That's a huge subject.
Cancer and its impact on what?
Well, do you consider cancer pretty much all environmental, environmentally induced?
Oh, gosh.
Inner environment as well as external. I hear myself answering myself.
Yeah, so it is both inner and external. I did a lot of research when I was training about the psychoneuroimmunology, which is the psychological, neurological, and immune aspects of cancer.
Oh, did you study that?
I did. I did a lot of independent research, and what came about from the research is that there's a lot of there are emotionally people who are more predisposed to developing cancer. You know the people who have been smoking for 50, 60 years and never get cancer.
No, they don't even think about getting it.
Yeah, but there are people who have who have been around secondhand smoke for, you know, a few years and suddenly get lung cancer 10 years down the road, and you kind of wonder why. And maybe it's not because of the secondhand smoke, but there are common emotional patterns often in cancer patients. One of them is repressed anger,
mm-hmm.
Anger that they're not even aware of. Internal resentment that they don't speak, which also speaks. It also one of the other aspects is this sense of what they call pathological niceness, mm-hmm. where you're nice to other people to the detriment of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I can imagine that that has a lot to do with some sort of unspoken. It affects the unspoken angers that mm-hmm. You've not dealt with, but. In general, cancer to me is a failure. Well, I don't want to say that this is the only thing, but part of it is the failure of the immune system to mediate and get rid of the cancer cells when they are very small. There's the emotional component, and then environmentally, there are certainly things that have direct connection with cancers.
So would you say that our emotions suppress our immune function?
Right. And this goes back to stress as well. You know, if you've ever had a really high stress situation and, you know, 2 days later you catch a cold after the stressful situation has relieved itself, that's the impact of your stress hormones impacting your immune system. So
that's pretty interesting. The last time that happened to me, I'd just been through 3 or 4 spiritual events that were really awakening.
Right. And in some ways you can think of it as detoxification,
yeah.
You know, and that's great, but yeah, so there's a lot of, but there's a lot of impact of stress hormones on your immune function.
Interesting. I'm just thinking about what you said about the immune system and being quite weak early on and not able to clear out the cancer cells. I think that's, I haven't really thought about cancer and immunity quite like that, you know?
Right, and there are things that cause cancer cells to grow more quickly, chemicals being one of them. And I just wrote an article on my blog about river catfish and their direct connection to the growth of breast cancer cells.
Oh, really?
Well, they tested this catfish in Philadelphia. They had some river catfish that they found there that was so concentrated in chemicals that they put it next to breast cancer cells and they proliferated.
Oh, my.
So it was scary.
What do you think about all the vibrational healing tools that are out these days that are really proliferating?
I think some of them work terrifically.
Do you use any of those?
I don't. Mm-hmm. I use homeopathy a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, and I do something called auricular therapy, which is a acupressure technique on the ears, and that works really well. Great for pain and things like that. But I don't personally do a lot of the other stuff.
Well, tell us about your blog. It's a pretty lively blog, isn't it?
Oh, I've been writing it for about, I don't know, I want to say 6-8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
It's been really fun. It's called greenhealthspot.com, and it talks about the what I call the principles of vibrant living, and vibrant living includes the emotional, the intimate relationships and close friendships, as well as the environmental awareness that we have, that all these things that impact our health and have impact on how we how vibrantly we live our lives. You know, a lot of people live their lives in this sort of mediocrity where it's not too painful and it's not great either. You know,
and they don't want to get wrong, so they don't take too much chance.
Yeah, and you know, and that's fine. But my message is really to try and help people to understand how they can live the next level of vibrance in their lives.
Wonderful. And do you ever give groups on that sort of thing? Oh, no, your blog. Well, your blog is kind of a group, isn't it?
It is. I just talk about various things, and if people had other thoughts about what I could talk about, or I'd be really interested in hearing about them.
Well, I'm going to jump to a slide. I'm going to check your blog regularly because I know you had some. I can't remember the article. I read something very interesting the other day, and it was quite good when I've been reading so much. So I
found
that. Forgive me. But it was there's a lot that I want to study in it. But I also wondered if you would talk a bit about inherited things. So people are very quick to say, I got this from my mother. I have propensity from my mom. And I think that, have you got something to say about that? I think it really limits our ability for self-healing.
Right. I don't know enough about the technical genetics of whether or not you inherit genetic modifications in your DNA from your family. But what I do know is that a lot of the things that we think of as genetic are actually socially acquired. For instance, we eat the same diet as our parents did, and we cook them in the same way, and we usually run in the same sort of social groups unless we consciously come out of them. And all of these, so then we kind of perpetuate those same habits that we learned from our parents.
Mm-hmm.
Both from how we clean our homes, you know, and our housekeeping techniques, into how we deal with colds and how we deal with frequent, you know, how we cook our vegetables, all of these things.
Or how we expect to get ill, or how
or, yeah, and our expectations, exactly, because expectations have a huge role in whether or not we get sick, or, you know. So, and maybe, I think some of the inherited parts are really maybe the way we can detoxify things, or... and some people tend to detoxify. They have weaknesses in detoxification that I've seen genetically, because I've tested people for those. But those are all modifiable. So it also is affected by how, what sort of diet you eat and what sort of chemicals you expose yourself to on a day-to-day basis. You know, I know people who have, you know, their parents use the same deodorant that they use, that, you know, and their whole family use it. You know, it's the same sort of brand of chemicals and brand of foods that they've eaten for decades. So so I'm not convinced that all of it is in your genes so much as it is socially learned.
So what we can do is study what they... what their expectations are and what their weaknesses are, and then turn them around, right?
Yes, that's right.
You don't have to fall prey to all of it, do you?
No, I don't believe that that needs what your parents have experienced is what you're going to experience.
Why do you think I'm going back to chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia? Why do you think they're so huge on our planet right now? You think that's a cellular thing of an evolution that's trying to move up through us and wake us up, activate our uniqueness?
You know, I don't know.
I don't either. But
I want to say, and this is maybe because I have my training in environmental exposure, that I think that I do know that there are a lot of chemicals that people have trouble getting rid of, and also our antioxidant load in our in terms of what we're eating in our vegetables and fruits and things like that nowadays are less and less dense. So maybe our nutrient status is diminishing more.
Mm-hmm.
And there has to be part of the soul journey as well. So
I think so, because I believe in this thing about taking charge of your fragilities and finding ways to heal. So sometimes you don't heal the body. I know a woman who had MS, and she got progressively worse and worse.
Mm-hmm.
But she was a radiant light being,
mm-hmm,
that had a wonderful time and made everybody around her happy.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that amazing? So I thought,
yeah,
what a wonderful story it is.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, and she died like that, so you could say, oh, that life was too bad, but on the other hand, her role was really strong. You know?
Yeah, well, she certainly had an inspiration on others.
Exactly, and I'm like, well, so we don't know what is success or failure.
Right.
But I do believe that some of these things are really very, challenging for us to get into the truth of ourselves and our soul journey.
Yeah, that's
even
very
stepping
true
out of family of origin,
mm-hmm,
and their paradigm of illness or whatever is a good way to self-actualize, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I want to know, like, coming to your office and going through, you said that you don't put everybody through tests all the time, but I know you do some major tests. Can you tell people at home about, like, saliva and blood tests, and what's a good time for this, and what's a good reason for having that, and for people who want a mock-up on who they are and how they are?
Oh, right.
Well,
let's see. I'll tell you my number one favorite test, which is what we call the comprehensive stool analysis. It doesn't sound that fun to do, which it really isn't.
Oh, you said stool analysis. I thought you said comprehensive stool analysis.
That would be fun, but it's a stool analysis. And
okay.
In naturopathic medicine, one of the key things to understand in health is understanding how your digestion works, because it affects your ability to assimilate foods and nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
There are imbalances oftentimes in the gut, for instance, bacterial imbalances and yeast imbalances that are often caused by overuse of antibiotics or steroids and things like that that contribute to toxic overgrowth. Sometimes people have parasites and inflammation in the gut that causes a lot of issues. It's this is where the root of food sensitivities also start, because with the gut being sometimes more inflamed. It leaks through larger than normal proteins that get picked up by the immune system, and then you develop food sensitivities and things like that. So that's one of my most favorite tests to do. And, you know, I work a lot with IBS patients and Crohn's
irritable
disease.
Irritable bowel, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Irritable bowel syndrome and Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. You know, all of these things are so fixable, and people don't realize that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you think chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia and autism are fixable?
Autism, but chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia, yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. Autism is, a lot of the symptoms are reversible. It really depends on how soon someone gets to your child.
Do you do a stool sample for them?
Yes, it's one of the first things that I do with kids, autistic kids, because it's one of the things that is most out of balance. And, you know, you can't give them nutrients anyways if they're not doing well with absorption, so it would be kind of a waste. But most of the time they do have digestive problems. But
I have to hurry you, not that I want to, because I could talk to you all day. but I want to know quickly, what's the difference between, what's the validity difference between saliva testing and blood testing and stool sample? Like, what should we do? We should do a stool sample first?
It kind of depends on what it is. On what you're testing for. So saliva testing, the only saliva test I ever do is for adrenal hormones.
Okay.
It's a good test, a way of checking your adrenal hormones throughout the day, because the other option is going to get your arm poked 3 or 4 times during the day, which just isn't that feasible for a lot of people. So, you know, blood testing is great for thyroid.
Can you do a breakdown in all your nutrients in your blood?
I can. We often do amino acid testing or element testing, like minerals and such.
And you do that with blood?
Yes.
And then hair analysis?
You know, I don't do hair analysis. I do a urine test for heavy metals, and it's a chelated, meaning a provoked test. I use a chelating agent to pull it out, because normally the heavy metals don't get moved unless we move them.
Okay. So, well, you know what? We have to, unfortunately, go. I want you to give them your website and your blog site address again.
Okay.
And tell people where you're practicing, just so that they know where to find you.
Okay. My website address is www.naturalhealthcalifornia.com. That's all spelled out. And my blog is www.greenhealthspot.com. And I practice in Palo Alto and Sausalito, California.
Well, I've really enjoyed talking to you, and I've learned a lot, and I want to keep in touch with your blog and learn more.
Oh, that's great. It's great talking to you, Veronica.
It's wonderful talking to you, and thank you so much, Suzanne.
Thanks. Have a great night.
And you too.
Thank you.
This
Bye.
Is Veronica Entwistle saying goodbye to our paradigm shifter for this week, Suzanne Wang, who is really informing us from a naturopathic doctor's point of view on so many illnesses and whether they're collective or individual and so on. I enjoyed that very much. Next week's paradigm shifter is an interesting woman named Eve Kerwin, who she does channeling, but she channels White Buffalo Woman. And her latest book is called The Awakening. It's all about how this began to happen with her. Eve is very lively. She was here in Bellingham not very long ago. I'm very excited about bringing her to you. I've been talking about channeling, and she's going to be doing some of that for us next week here on Paradigm Shifters. My name is Veronica Entwistle. I'm an intuitive and energy counselor. Love to work with you if you want to call me for a session or email me, veronica@veronicaentwistle.com. That's veronica@veronicaentwistle, ENTWISTLE.com. Or let me know who you would like to hear about or what you'd like to talk about on Radiance by Design or Paradigm Shifter you want to meet. Plus, I'm going to be on Jackie Salvitti's show, ET Healing, Thursday night at 8 o'clock here on wonderful BBS Radio. And I hope you'll tune in and listen as we explore more about the shadow, the second chakra, the subconscious, the karma. Who knows? We're multidimensional beings, you and I, and we're just learning about it all. Thank you so much for listening. And I send you all much love, many blessings, and know that we are all connected, sending a wave of consciousness out over the planet. participating in a huge shift. Good night.